Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and today on the show we'll be taking a look at climate and weather. It's the last Monday of the month, and that means our weather guys stop by to talk about all things climate, and I know we're going to talk about that triple dip La Nina with them. But before we do that, just a reminder, we're in our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and it's your gift, any amount, that makes these discussions possible. It's the largest support source of funding for our WPR programs, that is listener support, and that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important. And I am very pleased to have Kate Archer-Kent join us as well. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here in your neck of the woods. And it's just always so fun to be with you. So I want to just take some stock here. Last hour, we heard from 9 new and returning members. Thank you for those gifts. And now we have that dollar-for-dollar match, Larry, up to $3,000. And this generous match is from current members, including a member in Brookfield, and it means that they'll match every dollar you give.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, so you can double your support for the programs you love by giving right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you might think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars, and we do get funding from the federal government and from the state. But here's the thing, it really is voluntary listener contributions that make up the largest source of funding for WPR programs.
And that means your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. And guess what? Now that you know how important you are, why not make a gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And the world, it is constantly changing. It is really hard to keep up, to make sense of the new developments. And as a listener, you rely on WPR for daily news and information.
WPR members make this access possible. So today, I hope you'll invest in the programs you rely on. Your contribution might be $10, might could be $20 a month. Just keeps the news and conversations relevant and on the air for everyone to enjoy. Your gift makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing today. You'll be entered to win a $250 Quick Trip gift card when you donate any amount for the WPR programs you love. Fill up your tank, stock your pantry, or pick up takeout for dinner with $250 to spend on gas and convenience store items. You'll have 5 chances to win. Find all the details at WPR.org/drawing. Enter now with your gift of any amount. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your donation for this fall member drive. Larry Mueller here with Kate Archer-Kent. The WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. Your contribution of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose makes a big difference for the entire community.
That's right, it does. And supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now, at this minute, is a great thing to do with a few minutes of your time. All we need is your name, contact information, how you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
And your gift supports the stories and the programs, the weather guys, all that keep you informed and connected to the world. And we're going to do a lot of that during the show today. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Be mindful that our dollar-for-dollar match is in effect.
There I'd almost forgotten.
Yes, there is room for that gift to be matched now. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
And here's an added bonus, by the way, if for supporting these programs, Kate, your donation, or well, not yours, Kate, but everybody
mine,
else's, everybody else's donation enters them into a deal to win $250 to spend on gas, food, drinks, and more at Quick Trip. So you're in the list to have a chance to win $250 to spend on gas, food, drinks, and more at Quick Trip. So give right now, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And sustainers, if those of you making ongoing monthly gift, you're automatically entered.
Well, I want to throw out here some love for you, Larry. Robert in Cross Plains says, Larry Mueller told me to donate, and I always do what he says. I love that. Paul in La Crosse simply says, thank you for your wide-ranging topics. Well, you know, Larry, that's a real powerful testament there.
It is. I really appreciate Robert and Paul, and you too, as you listen in today. I hope you'll make your contribution. Your gift, very powerful, really makes a difference, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for that. Kate, you'll come back and talk with us again?
Indeed, I will.
She'll be back, but right now I want to turn my attention to two gentlemen who are sitting in the studio with me right now, our weather guys, Steve Ackerman. Steve is Vice Chancellor for Research and Graduate Education at the UW-Madison, of course, also a member of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And Steve, good to see your smiling face.
It's great to be here, Larry.
Well, it's good to have you here. And John, good to have John here as well. John Martin is a professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. John, good to see you.
A pleasure as always, Larry.
So as I talk with John and Steve, I hope you'll join in with your own questions. Maybe you've got a question about La Nina and how it might affect the weather in your area. What are your predictions for that first frost? Or what other related weather or climate questions do you have? The number to call is 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us to ideas at WPR.org. Well, La Nina is back for a third year in a row. Scientists are calling this the triple dip. I might get a triple dip ice cream cone in the summer, but I think it may be a lot better, that kind of triple dip.
I think triple dip is a much better name for ice cream than for a La Nina, which is back for the third time.
Which is rare, but
triple dip makes it sound like it's changing.
Right,
or something.
Right. It does sound a little too sensationalistic a way to me.
You know, and we talk about El Nino and La Nina every year, and every year I kind of get it screwed up in my head as to exactly what do they represent. Maybe talk about that first, Steve.
So it's association between the coupling of the atmosphere and the ocean, the general circulation pattern, and when it occurs, it's cooler temperatures in the Pacific. The sea surface temperatures there are cooler. And that leads to a certain circulation pattern. And I think what is relevant, or at least what I focus on in the upper Midwest and the Great Lakes region, is when there is a La Nina going, and they have like a 90% chance of it occurring this year, it's for more snowfall in the upper Great Lakes region.
Yeah, sort of a bit more of a mixed bag. I have to say, I hear that, and I know that what comes out is a little more precipitation. So I'm afraid that I hope that it turns out to be snowy. But Steve's right, absolutely right, that historically it does tend to be cooler enough to increase the snowfall in those years. I hope that's the case this year.
Right. Yeah. Well, and we probably should mention it, just because of all the drought conditions and the problems with water that we've got out west, that probably means drier in that part of the world or the country where we need water.
Yeah, out in the western part. And we do. I mean, there's a really dry area throughout most of the west and southwest, and now even creeping into the northwest.
Yeah, and for some of the northeast was in places had severe drought. Boston area had a severe drought, Category 5 drought, that was only recently ameliorated but not eliminated. So it's been widespread. A lot of places have had some struggles.
John from Eagle emailed. He's been watching temperatures across the nation for years, and he's noticed that Billings, Montana, often has highs in the mid to upper 90s in the summer. It's further north than Madison. Mm. So where does all the heat come from?
Billings is an interesting place, like a lot of places in the immediate lee of the North American Rocky Mountains, in that case in the United States. If you could flow across the mountains, it's quite easy to to have the air subside, that is sink to lower elevation. And when it does that, it gets compressed because the pressure gets higher and it warms up. So a lot of places in the lee of the Rocky Mountains can have really warm summertime temperatures. In fact, some can have warm temperatures in the middle of the winter, which seem unusual. Billings is a little too far to the east of the highest terrain, but there are places in the state of Montana that can have locally really warm temperatures on certain types of days, in the wintertime even. And another famous place for that is Spearfish, South Dakota, where it can get really warm. And that's near, that's the Black Hills, the immediate black lee of the Black Hills of South Dakota. It's known as the Banana Belt of South Dakota. It's warm.
So then that substance also gets rid of clouds.
Yeah,
then you get the sunshine to actually
go
along with the compression heating.
And it's Spearfish?
Yeah, Spearfish. And the closer, the bigger city, it just escaped my memory what the bigger city is in western South Dakota. Spearfish is a small town, and I can't remember the name of the bigger town.
I like the name Spearfish.
Spearfish is a great town. It's right near the the Badlands. And Spearfish is a great town, surrounded on three sides by high terrain. And the one side that it isn't, it allows it to get cold, but then the subsidence off the Black Hills can scour it out on really extreme days.
So the open area allows cold air to be injected in?
To come in from the north, and then the subsidence can scour it out. They had a 59 or 49 degree temperature rise in 2 minutes once in January 1943. It's wild. It's a wild place.
Oh, man. You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Another listener emailed, you can, by the way, also email to ideas@wpr.org, but John emailed, what explains the fact, and this may kind of relate to what we've been talking about here, what explains the fact that the Waukesha area typically has temperatures 5 to 12 degrees lower than the surrounding area, and that's throughout the year?
Interesting. I wonder if the bias is in the summertime, because if it's in the summertime, that's not so hard to explain. They get a lake breeze more frequently than places really just miles further west. It doesn't have to go all the way to Madison before it gets noticeable. And so that could be one of the things that biases a person who's paying attention to say, you know, it's always warmer in Waukesha than it is in Brookfield or someplace like that, and or colder. I don't know about the wintertime. It would suggest to me that the wintertime ought to be the opposite, but the winter is long, so before the lake freezes, maybe you get some cool, chilly days in Waukesha that you wouldn't get further to the west, like in Johnson Creek or something like that. I don't know. That's about that cold
season. Yeah, I would agree with you with the summertime for sure. In the wintertime, I mean, the lake isn't going to freeze totally.
Yeah, that's right. It's very rare.
Yeah,
it's a rare event. Somebody else wondered how did El Nino and La Nina get their names?
El Nino was because it comes around Christmas time, and the Peruvian fishermen realized that when the El Nino is going on, the tropical Pacific Ocean temperatures are warmer than normal, so there's a lot more colder water against the coast of Peru, and that's good for fishing. And so in celebration of Christmas, they ascribed their bounty to El Nino, the Christ child. And then the opposite was sort of never given a name until I think fairly recently, right? They just decided to give it the opposite name. But the El Nino was invented by the Peruvian fishermen, I think.
Kevin emailed. He's thinking about the hurricanes that are about to impact, or the hurricane that is about to impact Florida this week. And he always wondered if the heavy rains that fall are all fresh water, or is it the salt water somehow mixed up from that the hurricane kind of took off the ocean and took up in the air.
I mean, there would certainly be some salt in the raindrops, but I don't think it would, be anything that we'd worried about in terms of hurting crops or anything like that. Yeah. It's not that high of a concentration.
No, and strictly speaking, there's almost not a raindrop on Earth that falls. Yeah, it's pure water. They all have some sort of nuclei in the middle of them. Some of them dissolve like salt particles, and some of them don't, like soot particles. So it's never perfectly pure. It gets purified when it runs through the system, the watershed system.
Interesting. Well, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our guests, talking weather with them. I always love having them on the show, and I always love having Kate Archer Kent join me, too. She's got a big smile on her face today. and she's smiling because here we are in our fall member drive that we always look forward to. It's the largest source of funding for WPR programs listeners. That's the largest source, just like you. And this drives your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year. So you can take that important step when you donate at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And let me tell you, we are making some really good progress on this dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including a member in Brookfield. Your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 into $200. You get the picture. So take advantage of this match. Double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think about what you get at WPR. You get fact-based news. You get high-quality entertainment. You get informative talk. Steve and John are here every month to talk climate and weather with you as one example. There's also great music, and you get a rich experience, I think, no matter when you tune in.
And this depth and this breadth that Larry is talking about is possible thanks to listeners just like you. So make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Talking a lot about becoming a sustainer during this drive. When you make ongoing monthly contributions from your bank account or your credit card. And here's a nice benefit. As a sustainer, you're automatically entered in member drive drawings.
Yes, indeed. And this could be your lucky one. We have a drawing for a $250 quick trip gift card to spend on gas and food, beverages, super practical. So start your ongoing monthly gifts today. You will be entered into this drawing and all future ones, by the way, when you become a sustainer at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Take your Wisconsin Public Radio pride on the go with the new WPR tote bag. The sturdy USA-made natural cotton bag features a vibrant orange and blue design. With shoulder-length handles, it's perfect for groceries or books. And showing off your love for WPR and Wisconsin wherever you go. Ask for your tote bag today when you give $10 a month or more. Here's how.
Here's how is right. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We're in our fall member drive. I'm Larry Mueller with Kate Archer Kent. Listener support's the biggest source of funding for our shows, and that's why your gift, maybe it's $10 a month, maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose has an important impact.
That impact going twice as far with our dollar-for-dollar match. In effect, right now, up to $3,000. It's a great time to donate because current members, including a member in Brookfield, will double every dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double the impact of your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Cool thing at WPR is that you get to choose how much you give. A contribution of any amount makes a difference. Here are some suggestions. The same you pay for your monthly, well, let's see, Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus. That's or your subscription to cable. That would be a large amount of money.
It adds up, and indeed. So, you know, you think about that. You add it up. Give now. You choose the amount. Your gift makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And a great time to become a sustaining member. Easy to set up those ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Get started right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And just a shout out to Saul in Stevens Point, who says, throughout my day, Rob Ferret is a barrel of fun, Larry Mueller is a load of laughs, and Kate Archer Kent is a cup of good cheer.
I love that. Saul, thank you so much. Oh, man. Saul, Gabe, what about you? Your gift right now is so important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you. We're talking weather and climate with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. And you can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Paul in Lincoln. Paul, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks for taking my call. It occurs to me that there are lots of folks who don't understand this idea of thermal blanket because we, and I'd be maybe one of these, who does not understand why particles, methane, for example, will rise to a certain level in the atmosphere and then apparently stay there. What keeps these particles at the elevation to which they seem to find a comfortable home?
No. Interesting one, Steve.
It's an interesting one. I think, you know, in when we talk about gases, that's different because that's going to be part of the atomic weight and the wind and mix. Well, the wind will always be an issue to begin with. But if we think of particles in the atmosphere, for example, smoke and things like that, as they get heated, they'll rise. But then we have in the atmosphere temperature inversion. So typically the temperature decreases with altitude. But every now and then, you know, sometimes it's associated with the lee winds that we were just talking about. You can get an upper level inversion, we call it. And it always occurs at the tropopause. That's the difference between the troposphere and the stratosphere. There's a temperature inversion there. And when part of when the rising air is gets up to that temperature inversion, depending on how strong the inversion is, it'll just rest there and stay
there. Just sit there.
And so a lot of times, even if you can't see it, if there are experiments from NSF or NASA along that tropopause, that boundary between the stratosphere and the troposphere, they'll detect particles that are just sitting up there just below the bottom of that temperature inversion where it's coldest.
Yeah, and as you point out, Steve, it's the fact that they're so non-massive, these most of these particles, that any little bit of sunshine, any little bit of updraft from the wind is enough to suspend them. So they're not like, you know, pieces of rock or something that fall through the sky. They wouldn't have the ability to be sustained the same way we see hailstones fall. They can't get sustained for any length. And then the chemical side of it is even more interesting in the sense that you got to go up to 80 kilometers, nearly 50 miles above the Earth before the chemical composition of a bag of air that you draw at that height is any different at all from what you get near the ground. So the fraction of methane, the fraction of carbon dioxide, the fraction of oxygen molecules is exactly the same from the ground to 50 miles above the ground.
Wow.
And the pressures there are, you know, less than one millibar, less than 0.1% of what they are at the surface.
Yeah.
So the mixing of gases is extremely efficient in the atmosphere, but particles can find some interesting hiding spots.
Yeah, interesting question, Paul. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Ralph emailed in and wonders, has the Arctic ice cap begun to grow this season and wonders how extensive was the summer melt?
So it depends on what you mean by grow.
Okay.
So now that we're entering wintertime, it is going to start to grow and increase over what it was in the summer, for sure. But if you look at the trends in terms of what it's doing September, October versus September and October 10 years ago, then no, it hasn't grown. It has certainly shrunk.
Yeah, I don't think we had a record reduction this year like we had. The last really record one was 10 years ago. 2012 was a bad year. Yeah. And we're doing some research, actually, in the department. A couple of different groups are investigating whether or not late summer storms in the high latitudes are one of the factors that do damage to the ice. And so one could imagine if that's the case, then if you have a larger number of storms and the year-to-year variability of the number of intense storms is fairly large, but they don't all impact the ice. But in a certain year, the combination of global warming and more storms can do more damage to the ice in this year, perhaps, than it will next year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, as Steve says, it's gradually decaying, but it's I don't think there's any report about this year being abnormally large decay.
Yeah.
And the minimum is usually met about a week ago, about the 15th to the 20th of September. So it's probably now starting to get bigger. But as Steve points out, that doesn't mean much.
Yeah,
it's thin ice.
Well, good question. Again, you can join in, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas at WPR.org. Is there any reason, or do we have a reason, why we've got this triple dip in La Nina 3 years in a row?
There might be a physical reason. It's not my expertise, but I can say this, that it kind of reminds me, and the hoopla around it is interesting too, because I do the same with my cold pool analysis. Mm-hmm. I've looked at that for like the last 76 years in data, and not that I haven't been alive that long, but you know what I mean. And there's never been more than three consecutive years where the individual change from 1 year to the next is in the same direction for more than 3 years. So you don't have 3 years of slight increase, any more than 3 years of slight increase, or any more than 3 years of slight decrease. And that seems to be the way that the hemisphere is systematically warming up, little starts and stops. I don't know if a similar thing is going on here with this kind of non-periodic oscillation that goes on in the tropical atmosphere ocean circulation that, you know, manifests itself as Enso and El Nino. But maybe that's related.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's pretty rare, I think. So the El Nino, La Nina cycle is about 2 years or so.
Yeah.
And so I don't think there's been, it's rare to get three year predictions in a row. And
right.
And the CPC, the climate prediction
center,
yeah. Thank you, is 90% confident that they're going to get another La Nina this year. And so I think that coupled with the oddness of getting it 3 years in a row, as opposed to more typical two, and then the really high confidence of it occurring, is generating the hoopla.
It's very interesting. And this is part of the hoopla, too, might be that the forecasts are so reliable now.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's only 15 years ago that it was not anywhere near as reliable for this particular kind of event. Now you can take them with much more than a grain of salt, with a really good, confident sense. So it's remarkable.
So, and we usually are talking about it in relation to the United States and Canada, perhaps, but this is a worldwide impact, is it not?
Yes.
Global
impact from what it does is it displaces or eliminates in a La Nina year when the water is cold. It kind of completely removes convective thunderstorms from the tropical Central Pacific Ocean. And those are constantly throwing momentum and heat into the atmosphere at a particular location that's proximate to North America, and it makes a difference in the way the circulation downstream in time and space evolves. And so it's profound. It has a circulation impact over the whole globe, especially the northern hemisphere.
So if it's bad here, well, if it's bad in Wisconsin, it might be bad in someplace in Africa?
Yeah, and the notion of connecting those kinds of impacts is known as teleconnections. And so El Nino really does have global teleconnections. There are correspondences between different places about the type of weather you get when one of these is really in full bloom in either the cold phase like La Nina or the warm phase in El Nino.
And I think as an example, Indonesia, generally Gao gets more precipitation during La Nina.
Yeah, for La Nina. In El Nino, they dry out and they have wildfires.
That's right.
It's just the opposite. That's right, yeah.
And what about Europe?
I'm not sure. The science knows. I don't know if I know. I don't know if Steve knows.
I know, but I'm not going to tell.
No.
I really don't know. But I can look it up.
Well, yeah, it's known, but we don't happen to know it. Yeah.
So 3 years in a row and has this happened? I mean, this triple dip, has this happened before?
I guess they're saying it's rare.
Yeah, it's rare. I think it has happened before, but it's not very common, which is why they're really talking about it. And I don't think it's confident in the, high predictability that it is going to occur, because it's just swinging into that phase now.
Yeah.
Well, what about a fourth year?
if it starts to go into territory where, you get unprecedented series of consecutive events, then you start to wonder if something's really fundamentally changed in the system, or what is it, at least, you start asking, what is it about the last 5 years that has led to this, inability for this thing to get itself going again. Really good question. Of course, that's what catches your eye as a scientist.
I'm actually just looking up the probability forecast for a year from now. And it's not zero, but it's less than 20%.
Well,
but it's possible, I guess.
And it's probably, if it doesn't do a fourth, it's probably good for everybody.
Good is probably a term that would be different,
in
terms of
good has
snowfall.
Regional meanings.
Right,
yeah.
Very
regional meanings. I'm sure that the Southwest would like to have a wet winter, and this is not usually what happens with one of these La Ninas, so that's not good for them.
Steve Ackerman, John Martin, our guests today, our weather guys. Questions? You're kind of quiet today, folks. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us. Email address ideas at WPR.org. Climate or weather question, maybe even a weather photo would be kind of fun, too. You can call it, again, 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. You might also give a quick call and let me know if you've had frost in your area yet. Or, guys, do you know,
I wonder up north somebody must be getting. I mean, it was 40-something degrees by our house this morning, so it's far from frost, but in low-lying areas, maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few around who have already had it, and they will this week. I think we have a couple of nights even in town that'll get under 40 degrees.
Yeah,
pay attention. Yeah, pretty amazing.
I woke up this morning, and I went to my thermostats, and I turned on the furnace.
Yeah.
So I did that Friday because it was cold, and I came home, and I wanted to get the chill off, and the furnace didn't go on.
Oh.
So right about now, I think we got the furnace guy coming in to actually look at it.
Oh, that's not a good...
I was so glad I tried it now and
good
not in December.
Good to know that now. Right? Yep.
Oh, my goodness me. I was cold when I woke up this morning.
We've been warm, and now that chilly just really hits you.
And not only that, but the cats were both glued to my my sides. I think they were cold, too.
Yeah, that's definitely noticeable. I think we just had our longest stretch between days on which the temperature reaches 50 degrees.
Oh, right.
Or below 50 degrees in Madison's history. Scott Lindstrom's probably the one who looked that up. He really does this kind of stuff. It's over 100 days.
Yeah.
First time ever.
Yeah. So when that cooler weather came in, it just seemed cold.
And it was all
really
of a sudden.
Not.
We're gonna warm people up with a little foul member drive information now. Yeah. That'll get everybody going. And I see now we have lots of callers calling in right when we're starting this. But here we are. Kate Archer Kent just flashed on the screen with her big smile on her face again to help me tell you about our fall member drive. Your support really makes it happen because listener support, it's the largest source of funding for our shows. So give now. Any amount makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including a member in Brookfield. We're making good progress on that match. And as you know, your gift of $50, it turns into $100 to $200. Take advantage of this match. Double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking at the phones of callers, they're full. All of our phone lines are now filled right up. And it's usually the case when John and Steve are on because they come on and, here we are talking about this triple dipping with La Nina. And it's, I think, this particular show and so many of them are just really good examples of the kind of great information that we produce here on Wisconsin Public Radio. How is your life enriched by the shows and the topics that we do? I think it's kind of unique to public radio in so
good
many
question
ways.
Question to ask yourself.
Yeah, it is. And we're listener supported. And that means when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many others possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes and make your gift.
And once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. WPR is one place where that is true every day. So consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs you love.
Hard to buy much for $2 anymore, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day makes a lot of news, talk, and music possible. That works out to $60 a month, and you can make that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Andreka, and I live in Madison. I decided to become a sustainer because instead of writing that one check every year, I thought, I don't want to have to worry, did I remember to do it? How much did I give before? Just set it up and let it flow and know that it's happening. I feel much better knowing that without my being able to screw up, WPR is getting that support regularly.
Consider becoming a sustainer with a regular monthly gift. Visit WPR.org to get started now.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Larry Mueller here with Kate Archer Kent. Your support during our fall member drive makes the WPR programs you rely on possible, and maybe your gift is 10 or 20 bucks a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
That's right. You said it, and now is the time. Give while you're thinking about it. Give while you feel like you can. It takes just a few minutes to make your contribution to WPR.
Don't do like I often do. Put it on your to-do list. Just take care of it. Take care of it right now, for goodness sakes. Give it WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. I've done it by the phone just to see how it works or how long it takes, and it really does just take a couple of minutes, and you have that good feeling of supporting the programs you value.
Of course, that dollar-for-dollar match is still in effect, a bit of a carrot in front of you. There's still room for your gift to be matched, so give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
And don't forget, we've got that added bonus for supporting the programs you love. Your donation enters you to win $250 to spend on gas, food, drinks, and more at Quick Trip. No contribution necessary. You can see WPR.org/drawing for details. But better yet, you're automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, I want to give a shout-out to James in Maguanago. Says, my wife and I have had the great pleasure of traveling with WPR hosts, including Lori and Peter, Norman and Larry, and look forward to many more adventures in the future.
Your gift, very important, really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and thank you. Taking a look at climate and weather on the show today with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, our weather guys. Steve is Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW, also a member of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Science, as is John Martin, a professor as well in that department. Lots of callers online right now. Let's go to the phones. Pat in Madison, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was wondering why we don't hear much information about weather information about Alaska. I was corresponding with my niece the other day, and she said that she's from the Anchorage, Alaska area, and she said that they had huge storms that flooded the coastal areas, and she said that they had a lot of flooding and damage. One restaurant burned down, and she said that the people are really suffering. But we don't seem to hear anything about storms in Alaska.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Pat. Last Monday's article that we had in the Wisconsin State Journal here in town talked about the tropical storm Typhoon Murbach, that went straight through the Bering Sea and did really bad visitation to northwest Alaska. So that's one of the places that's been recently very hard hit by extreme weather. So we've been paying attention. Steve and I have been paying attention in our little bit of ability to broadcast some of the interesting thing that's going on in Alaska. We were able to do a little bit of it. But you're right. I think we're so far away that generally weather in Alaska doesn't get a lot of press here in the Midwest. But we tried last week because it was definitely newsworthy, as you point out.
And you pointed out, I didn't realize this, it was the lowest pressure in Alaska?
Yeah, one of the lowest pressures ever recorded in Alaska was with the passage of this storm. And so places like St. Mark's Island, St. Stephen's Island, there off in the Bering Sea, were just devastated by the passage of this thing. And it was big news in our department, so we ended up squeezing some of that out into the news here in town. But I think you're right. Generally, it wasn't given the press that it probably should have been. And if Tropical Storm Fiona had, or Hurricane Fiona had hit New England instead of New Brunswick, I think we would have heard a lot more about it. You know, it's a little bit jingoistic in a way, but we've got Ian bearing down on Florida, so Most of us still consider Florida part of the union, so yeah, we're definitely going to worry about
it
that.
It is kind of, you know, there's some news. What is news? And they teach this in classes. And it's proximity, it's importance, it's in timeliness. And proximity is what you were just talking about.
Yeah, it's pretty far away.
So it has to be really rare far away.
It's going to get more coverage the closer it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, that's what happens.
Yeah.
So, Pat, thank you so much for calling. Chuck in Wisconsin Dells, on to you now. Hi, Chuck.
Yeah, guys, thank you. I was just wondering, should I stock up on salt for this winter or get my snow shovel out? I just wonder if it's going to be more icy or snowy.
Chuck, I'm let John take that question.
Chuck, if I had the answer to that, almost half my anxieties would melt right away without any salt. I wish I knew. I think, like Steve said earlier in the show, I think there's a better chance than even that we'll see maybe something that looks a little more like a traditional winter here. Where are you exactly, Chuck? I forget.
Wisconsin Dells.
Oh, in the Dells. Okay, right in the center of the state. Yeah, I would kind of lay my bets against there being more snow than the last 2 years, which have been, you know, almost historically wimpy. But that doesn't really tell you much, does it, about what happens to the snow once it starts to melt? Do we get a couple of refreeze events? Do you get ice? I guess a simple rule for me is the more snow you get, the more likely I am ready myself for ice as well. So I guess if I'm going to say a little bit more snow than we've had in the last 2 years, I'd be ready for both.
There you go. Chuck, thank you. Cal in Sugar Camp. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm 15 miles north of Rhineland, and we had a frost last Thursday night, and we're going to have an even deeper one tomorrow night. And it seems to me that this cold weather is a little early, unless I've just been, lured by the last two winters. I just don't remember it being this cold this early and miserable. It's miserable damp and little bits of rain, and it's nasty. Yeah. And it's so early.
Yeah. Yeah, Cal, I think you're right. I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, unfortunately, but our contention this Monday's column was that Fiona was a strong storm, but the cold front that ushered in the chilliness that we're all experiencing now in the state was also unusually vigorous for this time of year, and the combination of those two led to the disaster in Nova Scotia. So I think that that's right. I don't know the stats, but I have a feeling that you're right, that this is unusually early and unusually brutal.
I'll have to look. I saw a map. There was a map of the country, and it showed the normal freeze dates or
first dates. Yeah, I was looking at that, too, for Wisconsin.
And I can't remember where.
What I remember is I was a little surprised for southern Wisconsin because that's more like mid-October.
Is that right?
And
okay.
Not early October. Yeah. So we definitely seen that early. And I think in the central part of the of Wisconsin, which, again, is not, I guess, as far north as Sugar Camp, it was more late September.
Yeah.
So it might not
September 21st.
I think it might have been just a rapid change that we
The change was rapid. Yeah. We went from a dew point of 68 to a high temperature of 48. That doesn't usually happen in late September. But, you got to juxtapose it against what's been happening the last several years in a row, which is a really late frost. If this one comes, even if it's on schedule in Sugar Camp, that's going to seem early,
right?
Because our memories can be persuaded quickly by prior events.
Yeah. You know what really I found interesting in that map? With the map for Wisconsin, there were holes, like in the north, where it would be later, like way up north.
Might be near lakes or something like that, perhaps.
Well, I would guess lakes and also elevated terrain.
Oh, yeah.
So that
as
it cools down, it kind of slopes away to the area.
So maybe that's it. Yeah. But I wish I knew where I saw that so I could tell Cal where to look.
Yeah,
I can't remember. Well, we'll try to find that. Stay listening, Cal. We'll try to find that give you that, because I think a lot of people would be interested in that, looking at the normal dates.
I think, I'm pretty sure I got it off of the Midwest Climate Watch webpage. That would be MRCC something.
Midwest Climate Watch website.
Website,
Midwest Climate Watch website. Yeah. Okay.
Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
Oh, yeah. That's why it is. It's MRCC.
MRCC. Midwestern Regional Climate. I think that's where I saw it. I was just looking through it before we came here, and I couldn't find it because I wanted to know
when is
that first frost date, because it was surprisingly later than I would have guessed.
Cal, thank you so much. Lyman in McFarland. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My question, our son and his family moved to Portland, Oregon a few years ago. And since then, I've really been surprised at how hot it gets there in the summer. And even extending into through September, it's further north than we are. It appears to be a little further north than Minneapolis even. And it's only about 100 miles from the Pacific Ocean. So I'd like your weather guy's thoughts on that.
Yeah, I lived in Seattle for 8 years, which is mirrors Portland in a few ways, but it doesn't get as hot as Portland does. Portland is notoriously warmer. And there's a couple of factors that play into that. One of them is what you just said. They're about 100 miles or so from the ocean. So the cooling effect of the really quite cold Pacific Ocean up there is not sufficient on warm days to do any good for them. It doesn't cool them down. And one of the reasons it gets warm there is because the flow comes off the shore over to the ocean. So it's coming down the slopes of the Cascades. And as we mentioned earlier about compressing the air as it sinks, that's how you get really super warm in Portland. But it also insulates you against the invasion of the marine air. So you get two bangs for $1, and you can get to 100 degrees in Portland with some regularity. I think it's probably every third or so summer you can get to 100 degrees in Portland.
There you go.
Seattle's only done it a couple of times.
Well, we've got something to do more than once here on the show, and that's our fall member drive. Comments to you from myself, Larry Mueller, and my co-host, Kate Archer-Kent. She's joined in again. We're here to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, like this one. And we're coming up on a deadline here at the top of the hour. Still a few dollars to go to reach our goal.
Yep.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. It's really important you do it now.
Yes, we have minutes left here of this hour, and we have some match money still up for grabs on the table. It's a great time to donate because current members, including a member in Brookfield, will double every dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double the impact of your gift now, right now, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, each time Steve and John are on the show, our weather guys, we always get lots of calls and lots of good questions. And they provide, I think, a great benefit to you as a listener.
Well, you always learn something new, Larry.
Yeah. Triple dipping, quadruple dipping. Oh, my goodness. When it comes to La Nina, you know, I learned quite a bit just in that part. But we've had many, many questions both online and by phone. And I think, you know, it's sort of unique to public radio, this type of service. We're listener supported. That's certainly unique, I think, for broadcasting. And that means when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour and so many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and make your gift.
Take your Wisconsin Public Radio pride on the road with the new WPR tote bag. Vibrant orange and blue design. Your support of WPR programs you value will be on full display when it's on your shoulder. So ask for yours with your contribution of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
My life would be diminished without Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, I wouldn't want to do without it.
It's just a comfort to me to have it on while I'm making dinner. And it
gives you a whole different perspective on things.
Many, many times I've listened to the radio and it's made me laugh or cry.
Wisconsin Public Radio is my source
for connecting to the world.
For everything I like to hear on the radio.
For everyday listening.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. Larry Mueller here with Kate Archer-Kent. The programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support, and your contribution could be $10, might be $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose makes a difference.
We have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect now from current members, including the member in Brookfield. Your gift of $50 turns to $100. Your $100 to $200. Take advantage of this match. Double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And here we are at about $400 is all we need to make this possible. And I'd phone in a contribution myself, except I'm talking to you right now, or I'd do it. Support the programs that you love right now. We've got a minute or so to go here to reach our goal, and not only to reach our goal, but when you reach your goal, what you're doing is you're providing the programming that you're going to be listening to over the next year and years. If you haven't done it yet, do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552, make that contribution right now. I know Janet in Marshfield says she's a recent transplant to Wisconsin, enjoys this particular program and chapter day. What about you? If you haven't given yet, do it right now. Let's meet our goal at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Taking a look at climate and weather on the show today with our weather guys, John Martin, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison, Steve Ackerman, vice chancellor for research and graduate education at UW-Madison, our guest, and of course, he's a member of the Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences Department as well. Questions? And, you know, we only have one person up on the phone, so we can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call right now. We'll get you on quickly. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to Bill in Oregon. Bill, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I've encountered some discussions about the weakening of a pressure gradient that's supposed to hold the cold air around the poles, and that this could potentially allow for more frequent and less predictable incursions of Arctic air into, you know, central and southern Wisconsin. And I guess, is this real? and if so, how much do we know about what drives it?
Yeah, there's a debate that's going on right now, Bill, about exactly that issue, that as the climate warms, especially in the northern hemisphere, it's differentially warming in the wintertime at higher latitudes. So it gets a little warmer there than it does in the middle latitudes as a perturbation. Consequence of that is it can slow down the vertical wind shear and make the winds at upper levels a little bit weaker. Now, this is on the long-term average, and yet the day-to-day weather cares about what the conditions are at the moment. And so I've been thinking a lot about how the jet stream's changing as the planet warms, without putting my eye on the warming, just trying to detect what's changing about the jet, and then going from there to see whether or not we can connect it. The jet is getting wavier in the wintertime, and it's making slight progress toward the pole. For the polar jet. That doesn't yet convince me that we're having any systematic, and the speed of the jet is not changing systematically. I got kind of raked over the coals for that by reviewers, but the fact is it comes straight out of my analysis. And so the debate is not yet complete. And I'm on the side that is suggesting giving evidence that the jet is not getting weaker. It's just changing some of its characteristics, which means that explaining whether or not there's going to be a higher incidence of cold air outbreaks or something is not going to be as easy as some people thought it was going to be. So we've got a lot more work to do on that. But you have hit a nerve. It's a currently debated issue, and my view is the jury is far from out on that.
So wavier, but still strong.
But still the same speed.
Yeah. Interesting.
So it means the circulation of the hemisphere is stronger somehow.
Yeah.
Which is almost paradoxical, but it's in the data.
There it is.
It's in the data. It's not a model. It's the data.
Yeah.
So,
Jeff and Spider.
We believe data more than models.
I sure do. Yeah.
On that note, we'll go to Jeff and Spider Lake. Hi, Jeff.
How are you? I've got a question regarding, the frequency of rain events, 25-year, 50-year, 100-year, and so on and so forth. we talk about them happening more frequently. How does the amount of impermeable surface, parking lots and roads and sidewalks and all those things, how does that relate to judgments regarding flooding and these increased number of storm events?
Okay.
It certainly impacts it in terms of flooding, for sure.
Big time.
Yeah. I think in terms of when we get a 100-year event or a 50-year event, that's more tied to the atmospheric circulation than it is to the surface, particularly when we're looking at flooding in cities and urban areas and things like that.
And assessed more by the total amount of precipitation registered in the measurements, not necessarily how it's affected the area, even though they do go hand in hand, as you're pointing out. So you can have bad impacts with non-record precipitation if you've changed the landscape in the ways that you've suggested. And that's an interesting problem, but it might not be the same as the frequency of 100-year events problem.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for calling. Richard in Salt Lake City, Utah. We'll go to you now. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm a former graduate of University of Wisconsin-Madison Geology Program, and I moved out to Salt Lake City after school. And I just couldn't help but notice that the immediacy of the water scarcity crisis in the West, prevalence of wildfire smoke, and with most recently the Great Salt Lake drying up, just coming visiting back to Wisconsin, I just feel so insulated from the climate challenges that our country is facing in our world. And I'm just curious if our guests have any thoughts on the psyche towards climate change, depending on where you are geographically located and, you know, the effects of floods and fires and water scarcity.
I think that's a really interesting point, Rich. I think you're right about that, especially, I will say, for this particular summer. We've been reading in the newspapers about disasters all over the globe in terms of heat, humidity, and a wildfire threat and all that. And here in Madison and the state generally, I think we would probably all agree it's been a relatively benign summer. We haven't had excessive humidity. We haven't had excessive rainfall, excessive drought. And so you're right. I think where you live and what you're experiencing day to day might very well color your sense of whether or not there's any urgency to this problem. And I think you've hit it right on the head. It's unfortunate that we are a species that needs to be backed up against the wall before we tend to do anything about major problems. But perhaps that's the only silver lining about all the suffering that a lot of people have been under this summer.
Yeah. I think it goes back to what you were saying, Larry, about the further away it is, the less relevant it is.
Yeah.
The problem is that this is all tied to global changes that are going on. And so it's a signal that this is happening, and yet we don't see it directly. And so we're not paying as much attention to it as perhaps we were. But I will say we're paying a lot more attention than we did 20 years ago.
I agree with that. I agree. And the people who stand out as skeptics, some of them elected officials, look more and more ridiculous. When some senators from Florida will say things like, well, you know, you can't make a law that will change the weather when Miami is flooding every single day downtown just because the tide is rising. You know, that's kind of a ridiculous stance to take. So they look a little bit more foolish than they did 20 years ago.
Yeah, and you might not be able to make a law to change the weather or a particular weather event, but you can certainly do something to lessen the impact.
That's right, and that's
as
we're carefully
just talking about with flooding because of urban. Right,
right. It's a carefully constructed way to say it without saying anything. You know, they know what they know their business, but they don't know the science.
Richard, thank you again for calling. Tony in Sturgeon Bay. We go to you now. Hi, Tony.
Good morning, everyone. Or good afternoon. I've been hearing this term thrown around lately, zombie ice in Greenland. And the debate is whether or not or when it's going to break off. Has there been any global maps drawn if that should happen? And what would the new coastal maps look like? And more specifically, what would it do to the Great Lakes? And even more specifically, what would it do to Door County? Like towns like Ephraim, where it's really at sea lake level, and could we see Door County cut in half by lake levels?
I have not heard the phrase zombie ice.
I'm not sure. I have heard it, but I've not really paid attention to what it means. It probably means the amount of ice on the Greenland ice cap that maybe is susceptible to changing phase. By estimates, what would that do to global sea
levels? If it breaks
levels?
Off from the main ice,
yeah,
yeah. Then it's set adrift and it melts. It doesn't survive if it's in the ocean.
So, and yeah, what does that do?
If we lose the Greenland ice cap, then that adds to ocean levels.
Right.
Also, Greenland, the land pops up.
Yeah.
Because you have all this land pushing down, which also increases sea levels. So I would. So I don't know what the impact is of then pushing salt water, more salt water down the St. Lawrence River down there into the Great Lakes.
I don't know either. I don't know how the inland lakes would be affected. I'm sure they would be. I just don't know how.
It would take a lot of effort and a large raise in sea level to get to Lake Superior. I would think so.
But if you're in Miami or if you're in Florida or when you're right on the coast
then you're going to see that impact.
You're going to feel that. That's right. And if the whole ice cap goes away, I think I've heard estimates that it's a 10-foot or 10-meter sea level rise. So it's an enormous amount of water trapped on the Greenland ice cap. But it's not all susceptible to quick melting.
Maybe
the zombie ice is the stuff on the edges that you say, Larry. If it gets set adrift, it's going to melt. It's not coming back.
Right.
Yeah.
And that'll raise the sea levels a little.
Tony, thanks. Tom and Minocqua, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Larry. I know your guests are scientists and probably hate to talk about anecdotal situations, but I just think it seems increasingly problematic in terms of weather forecasting. Just to use as an example, right now I'm near Wausau. There's a 4% chance of rain, and it's raining. And that seems to happen more and more, where there's no rain in the forecast. I go out on a long walk, I go on a bike ride, I get caught in a rainstorm. So is it just me, or is there something really happening that makes weather forecasting even more problematic or challenging than it has been?
I hate to say that it's you, Tom, but I will say this as a preface to my answer. The accuracy of weather forecasts today, and this is true just about everywhere on the globe, is in a different league than it was even in 1980. And so that does not mean that it's spotless. The record isn't spotless, and there are times where you're going to get caught in a situation where you really relied on it. Perhaps your reliance has gone up because there is an almost unconscious agreement that the forecasts are better. And then when you get caught, you know, in the wrong place at the wrong time, it has a little bit more of an impact on you. So it may just be your recollections of particularly stunning bad forecasts that are they're driving your sense that, broadly speaking, they're getting worse, because it's just the opposite, as it turns out.
There you go. Thanks, Tom. Vernon, Eastern Eau Claire County.
Yeah, thanks for letting me on. Okay, guys, here's the event that changed the global climate for the planet Earth in 2022. It's called HUNOE-TOMGA-TOMGA-AAPAI. I hope I spelled it right. An undersea volcano erupted that emitted 50 teragrams of water vapor into the atmosphere. It went 36 miles high, and it also sent ash up to 60,000 feet, and it may stay up there for 7 years. Do you want to comment on that one?
Mm. Yeah, that's the one that recently made a new island in the Pacific. Is that right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of water. The thing about water as a chemical, it's just the most potent greenhouse gas, but it's rained out in 9 days. Now, it doesn't stay around very long, but if it gets into the stratosphere, it might be a little different, and some of it did. So that will kind of moisten the stratosphere. That'll take longer for that water to get out of there and to desiccate the stratosphere again. But the ash definitely will have an impact on, I think Mount Pinatubo is the most recent similar example, but a 0.1 degree temperature cooling, for the next couple of years downstream, 92 and 93. So there may well be an impact. It may probably won't be very long lasting, and it's going to be working as a little puny guy on the beach compared to the weightlifter, which is the background climate change induced by carbon dioxide increase. So it will work for a while.
All right. Thanks, Vern. Lance in Guadalajara, Mexico. Hi, Lance.
Hey, hello. I'm curious about a phenomenon here. We're a mile high city inlet, and it starts heating up in the summer. And after May, really, the monsoon season starts. And it cools off really a lot. Often with these rainstorms, we'll have serious rain about every 30 hours. And it will get at night sometimes. And I
Oh, you're breaking up, Lance. I'm really sorry. And I'm not sure I've got the whole gist of that question.
What I took out of it is that in the summertime, it's really hot in Mexico. I mean, it is high. And so that's going back to the theme we've been really talking about today, about altitude really affects the temperature, particularly during the summertime. And then I sort of lost the winter time you're talking about.
The rain.
But if you're talking about raining, that means it's cloudy. Mm. And so you're not getting that extra sunshine to warm it up, which would make it seem cooler than normal, even though you're up higher in altitude.
And water evaporating will lower the temperature, too. If you get a heavy rain in a dry air mass that's near the ground, you're going to really cool it off.
Yeah.
So that could be a part of it.
Yeah, I'm sorry we didn't get you, hear you the whole way, Lance. If that wasn't the correct question, maybe you can email us down the road, and we'll get that from you. Thanks so much for trying, and Steve and John, always a pleasure as well. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Larry.
And thanks to Kate Archer-Kent, too, because she just comes rolling in every 10, 15 minutes.
Like that tide.
Just like the tide. She's and what we're not hoping to change, lift the amount of water, raise the water levels here. What we would like to do is raise the financial levels a little bit for Wisconsin Public Radio. You count on us for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep those talks on the air.
That's right. Listener support. It is the largest piece of the funding pie that makes the Larry Mueller Show and all the other shows that you enjoy possible. And it's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
You know, my computer screen just quit on me, but I think we have last hour we heard, we met our goal.
Yes, we've met a goal. We're about halfway there to our goal this hour. So, 50% of the way, we can really crush it here at the end, Larry.
Yeah, we can make it happen. Let's start with yours at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
Well, I think about all of the fabulous guests you have on the show, and thinking about your physical therapist, Jill Tyne, and Tyne Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne, Brody, who help you make sense of the aches and pains, Scott Craven, who's happy to speculate on wildlife sightings. Of course, today, weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, just always such a pleasure. Larry, you're just surrounded by really great guests.
Oh, I tell you what, it's so much fun to do this show and talk with people like Steve and John. They're wonderful guests. And they cover topics that are part of your everyday life. They give you advice and ideas because you've come to trust and appreciate these guests. I hope you'll support the program with your dollars. Easy to give. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And you can keep your Wisconsin Public Radio pride on display when you carry the latest WPR tote bag. Medium-sized tote, handy for trips to the store, to the library, anywhere you're on the go. Ask for yours with your gift of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I could use another tote bag. I think I'm going to have to throw in an extra gift. I do this every single drive. I talk myself into giving a little bit more money. Oh, man. We have a reputation, by the way, I think, for quality and substance. And your contributions in the past have gotten us to where we are today. And your gift today will take this kind of strength into the future.
That's right. Your dollars give Wisconsin Public Radio the means to keep that quality and substance you count on the air in our programs every day. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Big thank you, sincere thank you to everyone who's contributed today. Mm-hmm. We're listener supported. We say that a lot, but it means that your gift keeps WPR strong. the strong, reliable station that you can depend on. You decide the amount, of course. That's always the case. Maybe $10 or $20 a month. And support your listening at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio because it's one of the best mixes that I can find of both highly entertaining and highly useful and informative information. Wisconsin Public Radio really has a great variety in the type of programs they put on. It's very difficult to get bored of listening to WPR. I only used to listen to public radio in the car. I've recently started listening to public radio on online streaming. The variety and quality of the broadcasts are really enough to keep someone, you know, tuning back in for more time and time again. I'm Ben Martin from Minnesota, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for variety and entertainment.
Ben, thank you very much. You can join in, too. Join Ben in giving. And how do you do it? You go to WPR.org or you phone 888-202-2552. This is our fall member drive. Larry Mueller here with Kate Archer-Kent. Listener support's the biggest source of our funding, and that's why your gift, $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, it has an important impact.
It sure does. And giving to WPR is super easy. They've made it, you know, really easy. All we need is your name, contact information, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
Yeah, and that's why I've done it by phone so many times. We're always giving an extra. I always just call them up. And I know that it only takes a couple of minutes to make your contribution, and those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now makes a big difference. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And everyone should make the gift that works for them. And for you, that might be a gift of $100 or $200 a month.
Maybe what you pay for cable or your family's phone plan. Listening to WPR, it's something you do every day. So put a value on it, like other things that are important to you, and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
And your gift right now, it says, look, I value the Larry Mueller Show. I want this source of engaged, thoughtful, knowledgeable conversations, you know, that really make me think more about the world around us. These are powerful feelings, and you make a powerful statement when you support what you value, what you believe in. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift, $10 or $20 a month, makes intelligent radio available to the entire state of Wisconsin and even beyond, as we saw today with calls from Mexico, for example. You can see why your gift is powerful.
And that big impact is accomplished in just a few minutes. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You choose the amount.
And just a couple of minutes left in this half hour. We're looking for, how many are we looking for?
Oh, my goodness. We need 20 pledges in the door this hour. And so let's hear from you, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Larry, take it away.
Renee in Egg Harbor says she learns so much while listening, and the hosts are great, especially me. Well, thanks, Renee. And thank you. If you haven't given yet, do it right now. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution. And thanks for listening.